From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. U.S. Senate primary election day yesterday in Missouri, and yet another hard right conservative takes the prize. Headline, Tea Party victory again. Not Sarah Palin's pick, but never mind. From Indiana to Texas to Nebraska to now Missouri and next door in state Senate races in Kansas, the storyline is Tea Party rides again. The target, a U.S. Senate majority. The question, is the storyline right? And is it the people or big money driving the bus? This hour on Point, the Tea Party and 2012. You can join the conversation. Do you see the Tea Party on the move again? What's the engine? If Republicans should take the House, Senate, and White House, will the Tea Party rule America? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining us now from Washington is Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. She's just back from Wisconsin, where she's been following a tough Republican Senate primary race. Karen, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks, Tom. It's always great to be with you.
And with us from Joe's Pond, Vermont, no less, is John Geer, professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. Professor Geer, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. How are you doing?
Very well, and very happy to have you with us up, I guess, on your vacation up out of Tennessee.
Well, it's a working vacation.
A working vacation. Okay, we'll tell the boss.
Okay.
Exactly. Hey, Karen, let's look at this storyline. You hear it all over the place. You heard it this morning. Missouri, Tea Party candidate wins again. The wave, the tsunami is on. What do you see, Karen?
Well, I do think the Tea Party is having a very good year, you know, in a number of states. I mean, Ted Cruz's victory last week in Texas was certainly a great triumph for the Tea Party. But I think that in these states, a lot of things is going on in addition to the Tea Party. For instance, in Texas, I think a major factor was the anti-tax organization Club for Growth, which came in and spent $5.5 million in negative advertising about David Dewhurst, which really helped kind of level the playing field for Ted Cruz.
And remind us, this is in a primary race, and Dewhurst also a conservative Republican, but just not quite conservative enough for the Club for Growth.
That's right. And Dewhurst was the establishment candidate. Mm-hmm. He had been the lieutenant governor in Texas for quite a while. Everyone thought he was going to win. And he was also the, you know, favorite of the Rick Perry organization. Mm-hmm. So, yes, that was a big victory for the Tea Party, but it was also a big victory for Club for Growth, for, quite frankly, the old remnants of the George Bush machine in Texas, which also there was a family feud going on there. You look at Todd Akin last night in Missouri. In fact, both he and Sarah Steelman had both been competing for the Tea Party mantle. She had gotten the endorsement of Sarah Palin. But what you have to remember about Missouri is that on top of the Tea Party movement, you also have a gigantic contingent of evangelicals. And I think in this case, Mike Huckabee's endorsement trumped Sarah Palin.
So in Missouri, in this primary race, you had Todd Akin, a conservative congressman there. You had Sarah Steelman, former state treasurer, with Sarah Palin's endorsement. You had wealthy businessman John Bruner. It wasn't Palin coming in for Akin, but Akin won. He had Mike Huckabee and a lot of evangelicals behind him. But, I mean, who is the Tea Party, or who was the Tea Party candidate? Is everybody a Tea Party candidate now, Karen?
You know, it's the Tea Party is less of an organization or even a party than it is, I think, a movement. And, you know, if it's almost like a weather system. If you get the right set of barometric conditions going, they can cause a real storm. But they are not a political organization in the traditional sense. And I would go to another state, Nebraska, where a real long shot candidate, Deb Fischer, beat two other candidates who were expected in the Republican primary who were expected to come in first and second. Mm-hmm. Both of those other candidates had Tea Party support, from Tea Party organizations. Deb Fisher did not, but somehow she gets this last-minute endorsement from Sarah Palin. She comes in and beats these two guys resoundingly at the very last minute. Now everyone's, you know, a lot of places you read about her and like the
New York
Times.
The Tea Party candidate.
Exactly. She was the only candidate in the race who didn't have Tea Party support. But I think there's also a problem on the part of those of us in the media that, you know, every time we see a conservative insurgent come from the back of the pack and win, we I think, are a little bit too quick to put the Tea Party label on them.
Here's Congressman Todd Akin last night celebrating his Republican primary win in Missouri.
This campaign is about reclaiming our godly values, rebuilding the American dream, restoring the America that we love.
And here on Sunday was Republican primary winner out of Texas, Ted Cruz, on Fox News with Chris Wallace talking about the state of the Tea Party today.
It illustrated, at the end of the day, the way elections are supposed to be decided. They're supposed to be decided not by a handful of people in a dark room writing checks and picking the next nominee, but they're supposed to be decided by we the people.
We the people. John Geer, Karen Tumulty makes the case that, well, yes, these are votes and people make them, but there's a ton of money coming in here. What's really driving what do you see going on here, John, with the Tea Party, with candidates, with these victories? Is it the people? Is it the money? What do you see happening this time out?
Well, I think Karen had it right in the sense that there's a lot of different things going on. I mean, you've got the Tea Party movement exists, and it kind of comes and goes depending on, you know, which candidates and who happens to have the endorsements. But I think what's going on here is that you have a classic battle in the Republican Party. They don't control the White House, so they feel themselves out of power. This goes on all the time, and you have a battle between pragmatists and purists, and it's unfolded over American history in lots of different ways. And right now the Republican Party is going through all of that. There's big money often behind these activists because they're playing to more of an ideologically pure contingent. And when you've got these primaries where you have Republicans competing against Republicans for the support of fellow Republicans, and you have multi-candidate races, you're going to have some upsets and you're going to have some sudden changes. And this is part of American politics. It makes it really interesting. And now what we'll see is the Tea Party's had successes, as Karen pointed out, in Texas. There was a surprise in Nebraska. I think she's quite right that it's not necessarily tied to the Tea Party. Missouri's victory last night may help the Democrats have some better chance of keeping that Senate seat that we saw.
Because why would it help? Claire McCaskill kind of wanted Akin to win. We're told why.
Well, because she felt she could run a better campaign, have a slightly better odds against her than against him than some of the other candidates. I'm actually not convinced how much that's true, but certainly they believed it. I mean, Indiana, I think Lugar would have won easily if he had been renominated. And so that if you look at 2000...
But he wasn't. He fell to the Tea Party or more conservative guy.
Well, more conservative guy again. You know, the Tea Party is such an amorphous organization. It really isn't one. And people often label things Tea Party when, in fact, it's not the case. But you have this struggle going on in the Republican Party. And I think the Tea Party has a serious role to play, but we don't want to overplay that either.
Well, but let me ask, I mean, the real question is, do we see a GOP majority in the U.S. Senate come the November election? We already have it in the House after 2010's big Tea Party turnout.
Right.
And people are saying, well, you know, I mean, just that would be enormous in terms of what happens in the next 4 years. And if you get that plus a Mitt Romney White House, I mean, I've got here, this is one observer saying if the Republican Party wins the presidency, the House and the Senate in the fall, it will remake American public policy in 3 months, with kind of the expectation is there, given the way the GOP is going, with the Tea Party in charge. What do you think of that vision, John?
Well, I mean, I think it's wishful thinking, not because the...
On whose part?
Well, on the part of the Tea Party. I mean, it's not understanding American politics. Right now, the Tea Party has been able to block a lot of things in Congress because that's the way Congress is set up. James Madison's system allowed a minority to be able to block things, and the Democrats, no matter what will happen, will still have control of the Senate in the sense that they can use the filibuster to block a lot of efforts by the Tea Party or the Republicans. The Tea Party will find out that it's a lot easier to block things in American politics than to get things accomplished. And so that even if they sweep the board, which is far from a sure thing, they're still not going to have sufficient power to be able to accomplish all of their goals of bringing back, so to speak, the United States to its constitutional foundations, or however you want to frame it. But,
Karen, do you share that view? Is the Senate like a filibuster-proof majority beyond the GOP Tea Party grasp?
Well, I think it's less a question of who the Tea Party is sending than what they have done. You know, even when the Tea Party has lost, as in Utah with Orrin Hatch, they nonetheless, I think Orrin Hatch is a lot less amenable to doing any kind of deals out across the aisle than he might have been before this primary challenge. And I think everybody in the Senate, and quite frankly, everybody in the House, all the Republicans, are always going to be looking over their shoulders so that, you know, if Mitch McConnell does want to do a deal, they're going to be worried about, you know, well, what does Tom Coburn have to say about it? And what does Rand Paul, you know, the Tea Party guys, the
hard right guys,
who are themselves now sort of their own political centers of gravity in the Senate. And they are also going to be worrying about whether they are creating the conditions back at home where someone is going to, you know, come in with a primary challenge and suddenly find themselves with a lot of Club for Growth money and a lot of Tea Party support on the ground and maybe, you know, the evangelicals. I think these guys are a lot more nervous than they used to be.
So even without winning that majority, you think that sway is there? Is the GOP now the Tea Party? Is it the same thing?
Well, it's, you know, at the same time, they are about to nominate Mitt Romney.
The guy who wasn't the Tea Party presidential primary candidate.
You know, and who has, you know, not been ideologically pure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Tea Party politics in 2012, a big year, with Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, John Geer, professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. There has been a lot of money, as Karen says, at work here, of course, on both sides, but more from the GOP lately. President Obama warning, hey, I'm going to raise more, and hard at work in some of these recent races. Karl Rove, Super PAC, Crossroads, GPS, been spending millions in key races, including Missouri's Senate race, where Tea Party candidate Todd Akin won yesterday. Here's one of their ads.
We're paying double for gas.
More for groceries.
Our homes are worth less.
More people are out of work.
And it's a lot harder to save for retirement.
But instead of fixing our economy,
politicians like Claire McCaskill voted for billions in new taxes
and racked up trillions in crushing debt.
Now, President Obama wants to continue the reckless spending.
And he wants to raise taxes even higher.
That costs us more jobs.
Senator McCaskill.
No more blank checks.
Karl Rove's outfit going after sitting Democratic U.S. Senator Claire McCaskill. Here she was in May. Stephen Colbert asked her about the super PACs paying for attack ads against her.
Why don't you get your own spooky PAC? Why not fight fire with fire instead of fighting fire by going, oh, my God, I'm on fire?
I don't want... I really don't want a spooky PAC. I want the voters to be able to look at who's giving me money and make up their mind. For these spooky PACs, we don't know. We have no idea. And I think that's the important part.
But do
you
think
that's
important? But knowing where the money came from, do you think it's important to the voters in Missouri? I mean, they're not known for wanting people to show them things.
Oh, yeah. No. You got that wrong. We are the show me state, as you well know, Stephen.
Of course, Claire McCaskill has ads of her own. Here's one warning voters, sort of raising this issue of who's paying for the attack ads attacking her.
They just keep coming back. Secret money attacking Claire McCaskill. These big oil and insurance companies don't want you to know who they are. But Claire McCaskill will fight them. Always has. Always will.
Karen Tumulty, talk about scary voice. There it is. Right there. Just keep talk about the money here in the Tea Party camp. What are the different pots that are emptying in?
Well, it's not, again, Tea Party money. I think that the real strength of the Tea Party is actually on the ground. Mm-hmm. But there are a number of groups that are sort of traveling the same road as the Tea Party. And in the primaries, you would see that, I think, would primarily be Club for Growth. Again, their agendas are not precisely the same, but often they find themselves backing the same candidates.
Strongly anti-tax, the Club for Growth.
But this mega money, the Crossroads GPS, Karl Rove's super PAC, that is all going to come into play in the general election. And what they are out there doing now is essentially, you know, shelling the battlefield and softening the ground for whoever gets the Republican nomination.
But I'm trying to figure out here what you see driving this. I mean, you're the reporter out on the ground. Before 2010, we saw big Tea Party rallies. We saw those very feisty town hall meetings. And you could see this was a popular swell, even if there was also all kinds of money running there. So
right.
This time, what is it? Are these victories money-driven? Are they popular swell-driven? How do you read it?
Well, I think there is a very strong anti-establishment feel out in the country that Washington is just not working. And certainly what, you know, the match to the gasoline for the Tea Party was the Obama health care bill. I think the intensity of that rage has died down a bit, but it has left behind a very strong anti-establishment feeling and a very, very strong desire to defeat Barack Obama and replace the Democrats in the Senate.
John, I want to come to you on that. Let's get a couple calls here. Florence, South Carolina. Scott's calling. Scott, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm glad you're back. Enjoy your show very much. I don't see this as necessarily a victory for the Tea Party. I see it as a victory for America. I think a lot of people are waking up and smelling the coffee. And I had another question while I was waiting. Why is it such a big deal when Obama was outraising Romney?
Yeah.
But now
outraising McCain,
around,
you mean?
Now,
yeah.
Now if it's the other way around, yeah. Why is it such a big deal?
Yeah, Karen, how about that? I mean, there's been a lot of big money. Certainly, Barack Obama raised a ton in 2008. People look at it and say, okay, you know, turnabout fair play.
Well, what has happened, though, is there is a gigantic flood of money coming in from outside groups that was not coming in the last time around.
And after Citizens United, this so-called, and it's often anonymous, the spooky money Stephen Colbert is talking about.
Yeah, and it's money that is not in the candidate's control. The candidate cannot control that message or is not supposed to. But second of all, this money is going almost entirely into negative advertising. So we're going to see both the scale of the amount that is being spent dramatically increase this time, and we're also going to see the tone. When a candidate does not have to say at the end of a message, I'm Mitt Romney and I approve this message, or I'm Barack Obama and I approve this message, essentially they can say anything they want. And we saw that, by the way, yesterday on the Democratic side, where the pro-Obama super PAC put up an ad that essentially, you know, accused Mitt Romney of, you know, killing a man's wife by, you know, laying him off and depriving the family of health insurance. I mean, this ad, you know, practically accused Mitt Romney of murder.
John Gear, how do you see money this time? We're on the other side of Citizens United. There's a lot of controversy about these 501c4 groups, social welfare groups, which can have a lot of anonymous money. Does it make a different dynamic fundamentally, John, or not?
Well, I think it makes a different dynamic in a couple of ways. First of all, Karen's right. This is going to be a very negative campaign, and it's going to be negative partly tied to the super PAC money, partly tied to the fact that both of the nominees have flaws, and we have parties that continue to polarize. So you put all that together, and you're going to have a lot of negativity. The actual impact of these ads at the presidential level is a big question. I mean, there's actually some data that I've been collecting that's up on a Vanderbilt website for rating these various ads, and it doesn't look like the negative ads or the positive ads move Obama's numbers. People have made up their minds about them. But it does look like Obama's negative ads do move Romney's numbers against Romney, that is, towards Obama, especially among swing voters. And that suggests that they're going to continue this kind of attack.
What about in this GOP Senate primaries, where very conservative candidates are doing quite well? Karen suggests that it's the push from this big money, Karl Rove, Club for Growth, you name it, that's maybe making the difference.
Well, at the once you leave the presidential level and then you go to the lower level where you're talking about Senate or the House or even some state legislative races, yes, these ads can then start to have some big effects because a lot of these candidates aren't necessarily well known. But understand that the money that people are spending behind various candidates, they're not chasing bad candidates. And what I mean by that is that these very wealthy people are not investing in people who aren't worth investing in. And so that we often overplay the impact of money because at the end of the day, the quality of the candidate matters a lot. I mean, Cruz in Texas was a pretty good candidate, and that is part of the reason why he won. It wasn't just because of the money.
We're going to hear from Sal Russo with Tea Party Express in just a couple seconds here. A couple calls. Randall, Montgomery, Alabama. Randall, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I am basically an independent by nature.
Mm-hmm.
I like to vote for the best candidate.
Okay.
I have migrated in and out of the Republican Party, but that was just to get face-to-face with the legislators, and it was an easy way to do it.
Yep.
But the thing that drives me to anything related to the Tea Party are things like the negative, deceptive ad that killing a man's wife, that just incenses me. It drives me crazy. So I say, well, what is the Tea Party saying about it? The Tea Party is kind of a common-sense grassroots group of people, of citizens, average citizens. And every time they're attacked, it drives me closer to them.
And what about when their attack ads run? What about when it goes the other way, Randall? Does it drive you away from them or not so much?
I haven't seen many Tea Party attack ads that are national news, especially on the main broadcast networks. I just haven't seen that many.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you had a Senate primary, like we've seen in Missouri and elsewhere, you would see them. But I take your point. You're feeling sympathetic there, and I appreciate your call, Randall. Let me get one more, and we'll go to Sal Russo with Tea Party Express. Bill in Boston, you're on.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm all right. What do you think?
I want to put on the table the big gorilla that nobody has addressed yet, and that is fascism. And what you see, and what bothers me is that the Republicans, who I consider to be very intelligent, don't even see it for themselves. You got Congress, you got Republican legislators who are too moderate for the extreme teapot or whatever it might be. And what is fascism? Either go along with us, or we're going to kick you to the curb, or have somebody else take over your position. And that's all fascism is. And that's what we're facing here. All this stuff about the ads and all this, the gorilla on the table is fascism.
It looks just as simple and scary as that. What about Tea Party people who say, no, we want to balance the budget. We want fiscal sanity. What about all that?
Yeah, but you got to understand, all you got to do is look at what the House of Representatives Republicans are doing. Shoulder to shoulder, 60 to nothing, you know, against the anything Obama has to do. I can't believe that all 60 members of that Republican section of Congress believe there's no good things in what the proposals that Obama has to give.
Bill, we see the flare you're putting up. Let us keep an eye on it right there and bring in, if I may, and thanks for your call. Let me bring in Sal Russo. He's co-founder and chief strategist of the Tea Party Express, right in the middle of all this. He's on the road, one of those big buses between Superior and Wausau, Wisconsin. Sal Russo, thanks for joining us.
That's my pleasure. Glad to be on.
2010 was a big year for the Tea Party. What do you see in 2012?
I see much of the same. The thing that's changed between 2010 and 2012 is the movement has matured. It went from a protest movement largely in 2009, and then with the election of Scott Brown in Massachusetts, it demonstrated that if people got engaged in the political process, got involved with concerted action, that you could actually change the policies in Washington by changing the players. So the Tea Party movement got to work, started working in the precincts, sending out mailers, getting involved at the local level, state level, national level, and we had those historic results in 2010.
So what?
Let me give you one statistic from 2010 just to remind everybody. We elected more Republicans to the state legislature since any time since 1928. And 1928 was a long time ago.
It's a long time ago. So what's your goal? Are you like Grover Norquist, want to make government small enough you can drown it in the bathtub, or what, Sal?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, our goal is to restore prosperity in the United States, to get our economy strong. And the way we can do that is to reduce the size, cost, and intrusiveness of the federal government and to enact pro-growth policies. So we can't get there with austerity alone. It's got to take some reining in the size and scope of government, this unsustainable national debt. But we also have to put together a low tax and low regulatory environment so we can spur on economic activity. Because really our goal, we've somewhat modeled what we say economically, but after Jack Kemp, and Jack used to always say, we're not for the rich. The rich are already rich. We're for helping the poor and the middle class to get rich.
What about our caller? You heard him just now, who looks at Tea Party solidarity. It looks a little too fierce to him and says, hey, you know what? This is fascism.
Well, first of all, fascism is, it was the government owning the major means of production, and we're certainly not, we're not for that. We're for reducing the size of government. The reason that you find unanimity on some votes in Washington is because there is opposition to the Obama plan to grow the government. I mean, Obama believes in a bigger government than we do. And so our goal is to reduce the size of the government, to take serious the 10th Amendment, that the federal government cannot continue to spend money it doesn't have. We can't grow this debt like we've done that's unsustainable, because we've seen in Greece what the outcome is. As Maggie Thatcher used to say, socialism is great until you run out of the other person's money. And that's the place that the United States is getting. So, when we cut back the size and the scope of the federal government, doesn't necessarily mean we're eliminating those programs. I think there's 136 means tested programs that the federal government has.
Sal, we got a question for you out of Nashville, if I may. We got a listener on the line for you, Sal. Brian in Nashville, you're on the air with the head of the Tea Party Express, Sal Russo.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'll try to make this quick. I don't understand something about the Tea Party. This seems to be going against their own interests. One of the problems that we're having right now, and most economists are saying this now, is we have so much income and wealth in the top 1% that the middle class, to strive the economy, to build the economy, is starved of disposable income. And the trend has been going exponentially towards the rich. I mean, 5% own 83% of all income, and the top 1% has almost 25% of the income. That's up from 8% from Reagan.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the military spending, which has been a GOP thing, you'd think that the Democrats would be more likely to cut that, and that would cut our deficit. And these are things that I don't understand why, if the Tea Party is middle class, why don't they see this? Why don't they see that, we're being starved by the income disparity? Not only that, military funding would be at odds with...
Hey, Brian, let me take it to Sal while we've got him. We just got him another minute. Sal Russo, what about... We have seen a tremendous growth in inequality in this country. Our caller, Brian, is certainly correct about that. He's afraid that the Tea Party's blind to that.
Well, first of all, those statistics, you can look at them of several different ways, but...
Not that many.
Answers, you've got to grow the economy, and if you grow the economy, then that ladder of opportunity is there for everybody. And so having pro-growth policies is a key element of what the Tea Party Express stands for, because it isn't good enough just to help some people. Our goal is to help everybody, and you'll do that by having a strong, growing economy where there's opportunity for everybody.
And what about Karen Tumulty's observation? She says, well, this is as much about Club for Growth, big blind money, and Karl Rove money as popular support. What about that critique, Sal?
Well, the Tea Party Express is a grassroots or a political action committee. Our average contribution is $62, and we can't take corporate dollars, and we're by far the largest Tea Party political action committee in the country. So I just think that doesn't reflect what the Tea Party movement is. It's very much a middle-class grassroots, let's get government spending under control and grow the economy movement. So
we'll come back and look at exactly that. Sal Russo, co-founder, chief strategist of the Tea Party Express, joining us on the road in his bus in Wisconsin. Sal, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new Tea Party push, especially for the U.S. Senate. And what's driving it? People or big bucks? Money? Message? And is it a big deal? could the Tea Party be kind of large and in charge after 2012, or do you think that's an overblown assessment of what's going on here? Karen Tumulty is with us, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, John Geer, professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, and John, Karen, lots of response online here. Here's a listener who says, the Tea Party represents the majority of Americans. Most people that don't agree with them just either don't know what they stand for or just don't agree with the founding fathers of our country. On the other hand, Mary writes to us, it's big money, period, end of story. A lot of what the Tea Party stands for, she writes, such as getting rid of the EPA, would help people such as the Koch brothers, who have large paper mills, notorious polluters. Of course, they're big political donors as well. DB says people on both sides of the aisle are angry, and the simple answers from the Tea Party get the votes because the real problems are too complex even for the smartest people in our society to understand. And Mike in Tennessee writes, the last figure I heard was that the Tea Party was about 14% of Americans. Why should they speak for the majority? How do you assess the scope of, I mean, it's not even actually a party. It's this kind of amorphous but potent thing, John. How do you assess the scope of its support among the American people?
Well, I think actually there is some data that suggests that, you know, only about 15% of the public actually thinks of themselves as Tea Partiers, and so it is a minority viewpoint. But at the same time, it's an intense one, and it's part of the struggle that goes on in American politics all the time, and it's on plane in the Republican Party, and it's having real implications. I mean, I think both Karen and Sal made reference to the state legislature in the various states, and a lot of Republicans, a lot of Tea Partiers are having effects there, and in fact, getting members of Congress, even if they are members of the state legislature, even if they don't lose, worried about action on their right. And so this is further polarizing the country, and not necessarily a good thing. But don't forget, in 2010, the Tea Party probably kept the U.S. Senate from being Republican. And right now, the Tea Party may be having a similar kind of effect.
Explain that to us, John. Explain that.
Well, there were three races, for example, in Delaware in 2010,
right.
Colorado, and then, well, Alaska actually worked out in the sense it was that write-in vote, and there's one other state now I'm blanking.
Nevada,
right. That if could have easily gone to the Republican Party and could have changed, in fact, the direction of the U.S. Senate. And this may be happening again in 2012. Really, it seems to me that the Tea Party is having a bit of resurgence, as Karen indicated at the beginning of the program. Mm-hmm. And its real future is going to hinge on whether Mitt Romney's elected president. Because if, in fact, he's elected president, he's a pragmatist. He's much more moderate than the Tea Party, and he'll put a stamp on the party. But if, in fact, he loses, then the Tea Party will be back full force because they will claim the reason we don't have control of the White House is because the pragmatists got the nomination and blew it.
Karen, what about that? I mean, Mitt Romney on the stump in the primary trying to win, you know, he's basically saying, look, I'm more conservative than Attila the Hun. If he wins...
Well, he was also up against one after another candidate who really claimed the Tea Party mantle. Newt Gingrich, mm-hmm. Rick Santorum, Rick Perry even, and he beat them all one by one. Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting, though, that you got Sal in a bus in Wisconsin, because I think this race there, where, and I was there last week, is something people really ought to be paying attention to. It's a Republican primary next Tuesday, mm-hmm. that really shows the kind of struggle for identity within the Republican primary. You have Tommy Thompson, four-term governor, until a month ago, ahead by double digits, mm-hmm. until a Mitt Romney-like hedge fund guy who hadn't even lived in the state for 24 years, Eric Hovde, came in, dumped $5 million of his own money on the airwaves. Suddenly you have a race which creates an opening for a very conservative former congressman named Mark Newman, who
right.
did get the Tea Party endorsement. Now that race is neck and neck, and it is all three strains of the Republican Party right there on display.
What, the old establishment, the Romney kind of big money candidate, and the
Romney
Tea Party
kind
guy.
Of, yes.
How's it look? What did you hear on the ground in Wisconsin about that?
Well, I am dying to see. There's a couple of polls, including the very well-respected Marquette University poll, supposed to come out today. Again, though, a month ago, Tommy Thompson had a very comfortable double-digit lead. Now what's been it looks like these guys, it's anyone's guess.
You quote Tommy Thompson saying, I've been outspent 10-1, mostly with negative ads, but I'm still standing. Who is spending all that money to roll over Tommy Thompson with are these Tea Party bucks?
No, it was a guy, again, who hadn't even lived in the state until
Hovde,
he moved back last year. Hovde comes
investor,
in and dumps
fund.
between $4 to $5 million of his own money on the airwaves. But then Club for Growth came in with, compared to what they spent in Texas, a relatively modest buy of about $700,000 on behalf of Newman. But that was enough to sort of get him in the game. And there's a question now whether the Tea Party support on the ground in that bus that Sal is riding right now is going to be enough to pull this out for a guy who was running a distant third a month ago.
And what about Arizona? I mean, you've got a Tea Party challenge there too, Karen.
August 28th.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. But again, I don't think anybody at this point, again, I'm not, I shouldn't even predict because these things have taken so many weird bounces. But I think most people think that it's, you know, Jeff Flake's to be had.
And Sarah Palin is standing up for him. Of course, he's got his own record. But what about, John says, look, if Mitt Romney wins, you're going to see a stronger Tea Party if he because he's too moderate for them. If he loses,
if the Tea Party, if Romney wins, the Tea Party will lose strength. If Romney loses,
right.
The Tea Party will gain strength.
What about that, Karen?
Well, one thing is, if Romney wins, I think you've got a Republican Congress that is going to be much less deferential to the president than Republican Congresses have been to Republican presidents recently. As Grover Norquist told me a few weeks ago, he said, look, if Mitt Romney wins, he's going to end up signing the Paul Ryan budget, and we are all going to call it the Romney Revolution. You know, I do think that Mitt Romney's instincts are to be a pragmatist and to sort of cut the deal because, I mean, he comes from a business background, but I do not think the Congress is going to let him.
Talk to us very specifically about the numbers in the Senate. What's possible here for the GOP? An absolute majority, a filibuster-proof majority, is that possible?
Well, I think that control of the Senate is an oxymoron.
Right.
If you don't have those 60 votes, all you get from having 50 to 59 is, you know, you get to
threat.
And you get to, you know, you get to appoint the committee chairman and decide what's on the agenda. So I think the Republicans do stand a fairly decent chance of getting a Senate majority. But what that's going to do is mean that they will – their destiny then will be in the hands of the Democratic minority, which will itself have the power to stage filibusters.
And there we go, right back in that satchel. Steve in Arlington, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
In hearing this, it just makes me feel more the question, what is America going to look like? I come from Massachusetts, and some of the social issues, whether it be funding of Planned Parenthood or global warming,
yep,
or contraception, are issues that have been, so to speak, decided. And what I hear now is something so so negative that I worry, what kind of America are we going to have when issues which were formally decided, or the relation of science to politics, at least here in this state, seems to be understood? I am very worried about a kind of cataclysmic confrontation, which is building more and more as both the Tea Party and other forces seem to be creating this split in the United States.
I want to take that extremely seriously and just sit on it for a minute here. Stephen, I appreciate your call because, John, I'll come to you first. I think a lot of people watch this and they see a gap, a Grand Canyon opening up here. People talk about it all the time. Some people seem to welcome it. And here's our listener worried about a cataclysmic confrontation in our politics. What about that genuine fear as people watch this?
Well, we are undergoing polarization. I mean, there's no debate about it, whether you're, you know, somebody from Massachusetts versus somebody in Utah or Alaska. We have lots of differences, and they're playing out. And it does cause concern, because when the two parties were really close together, let's say in the 1970s, when there was, as George Wallace once said, not a dime's worth of difference between the Democrats and the Republicans, people didn't like that either because they didn't have a choice. Now they have a choice, and they worry about that. I think that American politics goes back and forward from periods of time where we have polarization, we don't have polarization, and people worry about it too much. The bottom line is the system moves forward. It's right now ugly. There's a lot of attacks going on back and forth because there's a lot of disagreement. But the system will weather all of those kinds of storms. And underneath all of this right now is so much unhappiness about the economy that if, in fact, the economy, which it will come back, I'm an optimist about that, Once it does, a lot of this anger will, in fact, settle down, because you do have it being fueled because a lot of people are having a tough time making ends meet, and that's where a lot of this anger lies right now.
Karen, the system moves forward. There's a lot of people for whom that will not be comforting, given the way the system has worked lately. On the other hand, you hear our callers' genuine concern about the ferocity of this, what looks like such a confrontation here. Speak to it.
Well, Steve mentions a lot of the social issues, contraception, abortion, that sort of thing. I think that is where this coalition, of which the Tea Party is a big part, begins to kind of break apart, because what they're united on really is the pocketbook issues, the deficit, the spending, the taxes. But there is a strong libertarian, strain in this. There is a strong evangelical strain in this. And again, I think once you get past that core agenda of economic issues, the movement itself is going to have difficulty holding together.
And in some of these races, you see this dynamic where, we're all Tea Party now. And on the GOP side, you hear them saying, everybody wants to have a piece of that label. You start to wonder if it means anything.
That's right. And it's and as you go across the country and you meet Tea Partiers, or you meet people who are aligned, in other organizations with them, there is a great diversity of views and a great diversity of the passions that are animating them.
Jerry in Cookeville, Tennessee. Jerry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Here in Tennessee, Bob Corker just won again, and he's reelected.
Mm-hmm.
I voted for a guy named Zach Poskovich. I doubt that too many people heard of him, but I don't agree with a lot of stuff Corker's done. I knew that he was going to win, but I voted for Poskovich anyway. I think the Tea Party, in a way, kind of weeds out the people who claim to be conservatives, and then when they go to Washington, they're anything but conservative. And I think this is kind of cleaning it out, so to speak. And a lot of people the one caller said, worried about fascism. I don't want to, with all due respect to the president, his teleprompter is plagiarizing Eugene Debs and William's Zebulon Foster.
Oh, come on, Jerry. But what I hear you saying is you're for ideological purity. You're glad if the Tea Party sort of weeds out moderates.
Well, I don't know if you call it ideological purity, but I would say trying to stay with what the Constitution says. That's what they are sworn oath to do, and a lot of people, they don't have an idea what the Constitution is. It's not taught in schools anymore, so when they lose their freedoms, they don't know it because they've never been taught what it is.
Jerry, we got it loud and clear. Let me get a couple more here while we've got time. Thank you. Dave in Des Moines, Iowa. Dave, you're on.
Hey, Tom, we got a strange brush fire here. The Tea Party people want to get rid of the wind energy tax credits. Senator Grassley, Republican, and our governor, Republican Branstad, are just dead set against having that repeal, because we've got a fledgling wind energy system being built right now.
In Iowa, a lot of wind.
A lot of manufacturing companies that make blades and make the engines and everything. And I see it. I don't know if I'd call it fascism, but it's getting close. But the ideology of them, I mean, what do they want? Do they want to repeal all regulations so I again drink dirty water and my children breathe dirty air? I mean, I don't know what they're doing, but they certainly don't have the quality of life in America at their best interest. And I'm gone. Thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate it, Dave. Though, I mean, you point out how things get complicated once you get economic issues at play there. You may want the subsidies gone. On the other hand, Iowa may want the wind industry. Tom in Columbia, South Carolina. Tom, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Briefly, I just see the Tea Party as just a reboot of the Christian Coalition. Kind of like, what's the matter with Kansas? To get people to vote against their own self-interest instead of abortion. It's Obama being a socialist with budgetary issues, even though Rand Paul goes against the vast majority of American self-interest. And then one other point, what about the nuclear option for the Senate? Should they take control of the Senate, there's still that nuclear option to get rid of the filibuster 60-point rule. Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Tom. I mean, it's interesting, Karen, it was just a few weeks ago you had the former Republican Senator Bob Bennett This is on the Fox Business Network. Weekly Standard report reminds us. He said, the Tea Party wave is receding. It's not going to be nearly as big a factor in this election as it was in 2010. Of course, it wasn't good for him once upon a time. But was he wrong? Is it? I mean, it's not as strong as 2010, but is it going to be a big factor, Karen? Is it already?
Well, I think it's, as I said earlier, it is a big factor, but only in combination with other factors. Mm-hmm. You know, last night in Missouri, it was in combination with the evangelical movement, or sometimes in combination with the anti-tax movement that comes in with the Club for Growth. It's when you have these sorts of synergies that, you know, that kind of can create critical mass, particularly at a time when so many people of all political stripes are suspicious of the Washington establishment. Yes, it is powerful.
Resurgence, John, in the Tea Party, or steady state, maturation, somebody said in this hour?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat maturation. I mean, first of all, it's not even entirely clear what it is, and I think it varies mm-hmm. from state to state. But the bottom line is that there's anger out there, and they're tapping into this anger. And it's a serious force to be dealt with. There's a lot of unhappiness right now. And I do think that the long-term future of the Tea Party is probably not a good one, partly because the economy is going to turn around, and anger will probably diminish a little bit. But we'll still have pretty polarized parties, and that's going to be structuring American politics for a good number of years.
Economic turnaround. I think you've named one thing that everybody would probably vote for.
Yep.
We could use it. John, it's been great to have you with us today, professor of political science at Vanderbilt University, joining us today from Joe's Pond, Vermont. Terrific. John Geer, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, just back from Wisconsin, and her reporting there. Karen, always great to have you with us.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Listeners, thanks for your insight, your reports from the field. Great to have you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.